It's a disaster. These funds have been appropriated by Congress. And so to just wipe out the funds with an executive order seems to me that it's illegal and not right. It's unconstitutional. So I know the NEA is filing a lawsuit, as will probably CTA be filing lawsuits. It just seems like there needs to be more done. This is an attack on the working class, and the working class needs to rise up, and we need to do much more than file lawsuits, it seems to me. We need to be in the streets. We need to be protesting and any other strategies we can think of.
On that note, Joe Herman, I want to thank you very much for joining us on Politics or Pedagogy.
Thank you, John. Always a pleasure.
Likewise.
You are listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
Good afternoon and welcome to Middle East in Focus. I'm Esty Chandler. On February 26th, Physicians for Human Rights Israel, or PHRI, released a report documenting and describing the Israeli government and military's targeting of doctors as a weapon against the population in Gaza. They write, quote, "From all the innumerable horrors that have taken place since the beginning of the war, this new PHRI report and testimonies detailing evidence by detained medical workers nevertheless shook us to the core. As doctors seeing our colleagues abducted from their workplaces, detained for months without charges in subhuman conditions, cruelly tortured, sexually abused, and denied medical treatment is something we cannot live with. And neither should any of us," end quote. Three doctors and one paramedic are among the dozens who have died in detention. And while the exact cause of their deaths is still unknown, almost 150 medical workers are still incarcerated under the same conditions. But PHRI believes that they can still be saved if enough pressure is put on the Israeli government to release them. Their report states, quote, "They are detained because they are Palestinians, because they are from Gaza, but also and importantly, because they are healthcare workers," end quote. I am very happy to be joined again today by Dr. Zain Khalife, who continues to educate many of us in Southern California and beyond about the compounding medical crises in Gaza and all of Palestine. Dr. Zain Khalife is a resident physician practicing internal medicine and pediatrics in Greater Los Angeles. He's a proud Palestinian American born to Palestinian refugees from Haifa and Nablus. It is my pleasure to welcome Dr. Zain Khalife back to Middle East in Focus.
It's an honor to be here, Esty. Thanks for having me back.
Well, I was shocked by the report that I read, and you were the person I thought that I most wanted to talk to about it. PHRI reports that the majority of medical detainees have had no indictment issued against them, and that evidence shows medical workers have been specifically sought for capture by the military for the purpose of gathering intelligence. So I'm hoping, Zain, you can help us understand what kind of intelligence they could be seeking from them.
Yeah, I want to start by also mentioning that the abduction of Palestinians without indictment is a routine tactic of the occupation. It's true for the ongoing genocide in Gaza. It's true in Jerusalem, in the West Bank, in all of the occupied Palestinian territories. And the reason this is possible is because of a long-standing campaign of dehumanization of Palestinians that goes back decades. Every Palestinian, whether they're a medical worker or a civilian, is branded a combatant and terrorist, and they are presumed guilty and often without opportunity to be proven innocent. And the justifications for these abductions and for these like mass incarcerations without any reason vary. Something like gathering intelligence is as loose and difficult to interpret for us as it is for the rest of the world. But these justifications don't have to have evidence behind them when Palestinians are dehumanized so much. This dehumanization is entrenched in the political ideology behind the occupation, and it's essential to justify the ongoing occupation and genocide. I would also be remiss not to mention my fellow pediatrician and the director of the Kamel Adwan Hospital, Dr. Hussam Abu Safia, who remains in captivity as a political prisoner who continues to endure torture and have medical care withheld from him. He and over 100 other Palestinian healthcare providers are still living under these conditions, under the detention of the occupation.
Well, paint me cynical, but could their captors be a way of creating the appearance that medical facilities, ambulances, clinics were being used as Hamas headquarters, as repeatedly claimed by IDF spokespeople, in lieu of presenting credible evidence to support those claims, which they have never brought forth?
I think I would agree with that assessment and interpretation of the situation. It wasn't long ago, it was back on October 17th, 2023, that the Al-Ahli Hospital was bombed. And the initial narrative put out by the occupation was that it was a backfired missile from resistance fighters. When there was no evidence to substantiate that in the midst of like global outcry, the narrative quickly shifted and labeled Al-Ahli Hospital and then all hospitals within Gaza as bases of military operation for Hamas, despite the lack of evidence. When El-Shifa Hospital was under siege, they eventually launched this propaganda campaign where soldiers in English, because the target audience was the world, pointed to a calendar with the days of the week on it in Arabic and described them as the names of Hamas terrorists. That same siege of El-Shifa Hospital resulted in the capture of almost 1,000 civilians, medical workers, people seeking shelter within the hospital. It led to the deaths of hundreds, later mass graves being discovered around the hospital quarters. And the official statement put out by Israeli spokespeople were that there were only 200 victims and they were all combatants, and zero civilian casualties without any evidence to substantiate these claims. So the targeting of healthcare workers is a part of this larger scheme to label any Palestinians, anyone who holds that identity as a threat and a terrorist without any need to to verify and prove their humanity.
And to prevent them from doing their job and taking care of the thousands upon thousands upon thousands of injured Palestinians who need medical care. The PHRI report also notes that approximately 150 medical workers are still incarcerated under the conditions I described in the opening. Medical workers have a special protected status under the Geneva Convention. Can you discuss why that is so?
Yeah, so I don't have legal expertise in international law, but the Geneva Convention, the Fourth Geneva Convention, came out as a result of the atrocities committed against civilians during World War II. And the groundwork it laid hoped to prevent those human rights abuses. Article 18 of the Fourth Geneva Convention is very deliberate in its wording. It states, and I quote, "Civilian hospitals organized to give care to the wounded and sick, the infirm and maternity cases may in no circumstances be the object of attack, but shall at all times be respected and protected by the parties to the conflict." So in no circumstances and at all times. These are very powerful phrases within this like legal article. And it's clear that the occupation has continued to violate these articles. The Fourth Geneva Convention is the same convention that prevents the transfer of an occupying power's population into an occupied territory. So since its inception, Israel has continued to disregard all of the articles of the Fourth Geneva Convention. And the previous incidents I talked about on attacks in hospitals have laid the groundwork for those dismissals of those articles.
The healthcare system in Gaza, by every account, has been decimated by Israel's ongoing genocidal assault that some people call a war, with At this point, only one hospital in the territory remaining fully operational. There are 20 that are partially functioning. The reports show that severe shortages remain in place of essential medical supplies, equipment, and even inpatient bed capacity. Over 111,000 Palestinians have been injured, and up to 14,000 patients, including 4,500 children, require medical evacuation abroad at this moment. Can you talk about another finding in the DHR report, which is the targeting of doctors as a weapon against the population?
No, of course. And one thing that you touched upon was only one fully functional hospital within Gaza. A report from Medical Aid in Palestine that came out yesterday cited zero fully functioning hospitals. The situation continues to evolve, and it's limited by the lack of access of like verified journalists within Gaza. Just before I came on the program, videos were coming out of Al Nasser Hospital being bombed in the middle of the night. So I came onto the program with a heavy heart as another hospital has been targeted. Now, the targeting of doctors as a weapon against the population serves the ultimate goal of the genocide, which is to maximize displacement and death. The direct death count has reached 50,000 approximately as of the past few days. This doesn't include the 15,000 presumed missing under the rubble, and it doesn't include indirect deaths. Now, these indirect deaths include preventable deaths from infection and disease that come about from like poor sanitation, from environmental exposures. It also includes treatable disease. Had appropriate like healthcare infrastructure and medication been accessible, the like outcomes of morbidity and mortality could have been prevented. The Lancet published back in July of 2024 a more accurate estimate in their eyes at the time of what the true death count, indirect and direct, as a result of the genocide was. And their conservative estimate back in July was 186,000. Now, the death count that we have reaching 50,000 direct deaths at this time does not account for patients with kidney failure who died because their dialysis center was bombed. It doesn't include mothers who needed emergent C-sections and then were not able to receive prophylactic antibiotics and had subsequent infections. It doesn't include the newborns who perished from hypothermia within days of being born. So the true death count is still yet to really be discovered until after the dust settles in Gaza.
Yeah, not even to mention those that are starving to death in the north. But we can get back to that. You're listening to Middle East in Focus on listener-supported KPFK in Los Angeles. I'm Esty Chandler, very happy to be joined today by Dr. Zain Khalife, a resident physician practicing internal medicine and pediatrics here in Los Angeles, discussing the recent devastating report from Physicians for Human Rights Israel documenting and describing the Israeli government and military's targeting of doctors as a weapon against the population in Gaza and the mounting medical and humanitarian crises in Gaza. At a UN Security Council meeting back in January, Rick Peppercorn, the World Health Organization representative for the West Bank and Gaza, warned, quote, at the current rate, it would take 5 to 10 years to evacuate all these critically ill patients, end quote. He noted that over 12,000 people remain on waiting lists for urgent treatment abroad and emphasized that over 25% of the 105,000 injured civilians they have on record, those people are now facing life-altering injuries. They will be affected for the rest of their lives. This makes the reporting of Sharif Abdelkudos at Drop Site News last weekend all the more dastardly, in my opinion. Sharif reports that shortly after the quote-unquote ceasefire in Gaza went into effect, as many as half the doctors with preliminary approval through the World Health Organization to enter Gaza were notified the night before their scheduled entry that they were suddenly rejected. Zane, can you talk about the new registration procedures and recent changes that have been put in place by the Israeli government, which includes barring any organizations from entering Gaza until they've gone through a new approval process, and how that could upend the humanitarian system as it currently stands in Gaza?
Of course. And to understand the impact of these new policies, we have to know how we got to this situation. The occupation has had a long-standing strategy of crippling Palestinian-sustained healthcare infrastructure, infrastructure in general, but especially healthcare infrastructure. This is a sequela of the military administration of the occupied territories prior to the Oslo Accords, but there was a great underinvestment in Palestinian healthcare. And as a result, prior to this escalation, only 63% of health services were being provided directly by the Ministry of Health. The rest was dependent largely on outside aid, whether it was the UN or NGOs. And thus, the consequences of shutting the border down, not allowing entry of aid, not allowing medical professionals and other volunteers to enter, are exacerbated by the conditions that were laid out by this underinvestment. So this new policy is weaponizing the bureaucracy of the Israeli military and government against all NGOs, all outside volunteers and aid workers. And some of the basis of their like weaponized bureaucracy is based on this discrimination on suspected political alignment and political beliefs. This new policy cites certain reasons to deny entry, including engaging in boycotts, supporting resistance efforts, even supporting legal proceedings against Israeli security personnel who have committed crimes. To support proceedings against those who committed crimes have been cited as a reason to prevent entry into Gaza to provide aid. So the downstream consequences are we're not getting services provided by these volunteers. We're not going to get the resources and the aid that they're bringing with them through the border. And this new policy has been expanded to discriminate against people who have had prior approval through the World Health Organization. But the reality before this new policy was, you know, anyone could have had like their approval revoked upon arriving at the border. It's true for many of my colleagues who have had long careers as activists and volunteers within the Palestinian territories who have no longer been allowed entry because of their activism and their work. So this new policy is just another tactic for preventing aid from reaching those who need it most and preventing entry of those who are willing to put their wellness on the line to assist those in Gaza.
Yes, and all this as Israel has once again cut off all aid from entering into Gaza. Between the quote-unquote ceasefire agreement in Gaza going into force on January 19th, and last Tuesday's surprise resumption of full-scale military attacks on the displaced Palestinians in Gaza, Israeli forces killed, again, during the ceasefire, over 155 Palestinians in sporadic strikes and attacks in the besieged enclave. In addition to breaching the agreement to allow aid to flow into Gaza, and yet the mainstream media never reported that Israel had broken the ceasefire agreement in spite of killing people, in spite of limiting aid. This includes on March 2nd when the Israeli government resumed full blockade of all aid from entering Gaza and announced it. That includes fuel, medicine, food, water. This is in flagrant violation of international humanitarian law and, of course, of the ceasefire agreement that they signed. At that time, at the beginning of March, the World Food Program warned that it only had enough food supplies to keep public kitchens and bakeries open for about 2 more weeks. So we're well beyond that now. And Gaza's coastal municipality's water utility told Human Rights Watch at the time that there were only enough fuel reserves to continue operating water facilities for 1 week. So we're well beyond that. Can you talk about the status of life-saving aid getting into Gaza and how it is affecting the lives of the approximately 2 million people under siege there today?
So the humanitarian state is very dire, and I'm concerned it will continue to get worse as there is no signs of relief, no signs of any new influx in aid. Since about March 2nd, all aid has been prevented from crossing the border in Gaza through the Rafah crossing, the southern entrance from Egypt. And since then, the amount that was able to get in during the period of the ceasefire has been dwindling. Even during the ceasefire itself, during that phase one, 1,000 aid trucks were required to enter every day based on the needs of the Gaza population, but less than 500 were actually entering. And the majority that were allowed entry were non-essential aid. So you mentioned the World Food Program is already running low on their flour reserves and may run out within a couple of weeks. They, since the beginning of March, have closed 6 of their 25 bakeries. We're seeing the consequences of the scarcity and this man-made famine already. UNRWA also put out a statement stating that they only have enough flour to distribute in Gaza for 6 more days as of March 21st. So we're now at 4 more days of flour distribution before UNRWA, the largest operating humanitarian organization in Gaza, no longer has flour to distribute.
That's the UN Relief and Works Agency, UNRWA.
Yeah, thank you for defining it, Esti. But it's important to understand that this scarcity, this famine, the scarcity of water as well, it's all manufactured and just, you know, a 30-minute, an hour drive across the borders of Gaza into Israeli territory, no such famine exists. It's created deliberately, and it is a part of the larger scheme of collective punishment for all those within Gaza.
Zain, you know, this medical crisis isn't just isolated to Gaza. There, you know, the strikes and the settler violence and the displacements, massive displacements of people in the West Bank is also raging. Can you talk a little bit about the situation there?
Yeah, so the situation in the West Bank has seen an escalation in violence, especially during the initiation of phase one of the ceasefire. The reality of Palestinians across the occupied territory, a ceasefire is never truly a cease in violence. Even in Gaza, violence continued. And this, de-escalation, this temporary de-escalation in Gaza was met with an opening of another front of combat within Jenin, where Israeli forces continue to occupy the city of Jenin, continue to destroy its infrastructure, displace thousands within its population, and just continue their violent occupation and displacement just on another front. So the targeting of hospitals and medical workers continues in the West Bank. Access of emergency medical services continues to be limited by the checkpoints and the restrictions in movement. And healthcare workers have been targeted in the West Bank before the escalation of Gaza, and they continue to be targeted as we speak.
Physicians for Human Rights Israel, as I stated at the top of the show, reports that about 150 medical workers are still incarcerated under the horrific conditions described. But Physicians for Human Rights Israel believes that they can be saved if enough pressure is put on the Israeli government to release them. The report says, again, they are detained because they are Palestinians, because they are from Gaza, but also, and importantly, because they are healthcare workers. What can concerned citizens do to help raise awareness about this ongoing crisis and, as PHRI suggests, put pressure on the Israeli government to release them?
The first thing we have to understand is that this genocide isn't happening in a vacuum. It's not happening in isolation from the lives we experience. Our taxes are directly contributing to this genocide. Our politicians, our leaders, our representatives are encouraging it and providing it the diplomatic cover to continue. So we are directly complicit in this genocide. As such, we have an immense responsibility to organize together en masse to oppose it and to make it as unjustifiable as possible. So I have three calls to action for our listeners. The first is I urge you to call your congressional representatives and demand the release of the political prisoners, the healthcare workers being held captive by the occupational forces. This includes Dr. Abusafia and includes the other 150 medical workers. Next, I also urge you to let them know that they must stop the influx of United States weapons into Israel in order to prevent further deaths and end the genocide as a whole. Next, we need to put our money where our mouth is and engage in mass boycotts of companies profiting from the occupation and its genocide. Boycott, Divest, and Sanction, or BDS, is a movement that has existed for decades, and it learned from the tactics that ultimately brought down the South African apartheid system. We can use our money as our power and invest it in places that do not benefit from the genocide and occupation of Palestinians. If you would like to learn more about what companies to target, how to engage in the BDS movement, you can look at bdsmovement.net. That's the central BDS website that guides our targeted boycott in order to pressure the Israeli government, the U.S. government, and private entities that profit off of their actions. The last call to action I have for you is to engage in education, both for yourself and for those around you. Continue listening to programs like this and continue to elevate the voices of Palestinians specifically who are living through the occupation and genocide. It's their stories that are going to lead to their liberation, and we need to be effective allies by lifting up their voices.
And it's why you are here informing us and educating us today, Dr. Zain Khalifeh. Boycott, divest, and protest. I cannot thank you enough for taking time out of your busy work schedule as a working physician to do just that, inform us, educate us, and give us calls to action.
Thank you so much for having me. Honored to be a part of the greater struggle.
As Al Jazeera reported yesterday, on Friday, Israel deliberately blew up the Turkish-Palestinian Friendship Hospital, Gaza's only specialized cancer hospital, as well as an adjacent medical school in a massive blast, an action clearly banned under international humanitarian law. This has left thousands of patients in the besieged territory with nowhere to go for cancer treatment amid the resumption of the ongoing genocidal Israeli military operation. Sam Rose, Senior Deputy Director of the UN Relief and Works Agency Affairs in Gaza, told reporters on Friday about the resumption of Israeli military bombing and incursions across Gaza this past week. It, quote, comes against the backdrop of no supplies having entered Gaza since the beginning of March, so for about 19 days. This is the longest period since the start of the conflict back in October 2023, when no supplies whatsoever have entered Gaza. That's suppliers of aid, commercial supplies, but also fuel, which keeps everything going here. And we've got flour supplies left for about another 6 or so days. We can stretch that by giving people less, and we always have to keep reserves in place for those families that are evacuated, end quote. Once again, I want to thank our guest, Dr. Zain Khalifeh, resident physician practicing internal medicine and pediatrics for all of us here in Southern California. I also want to thank Ozzy for his fantastic production support today. Our theme song is The Overture from Summer Night's Dream by Marcel Khalifeh. For KPFK Los Angeles, I'm Esty Chandler, thanking you for continuing to support KPFK and for taking this time to put the Middle East in focus. Thank you.
Support comes from UCLA Center for the Art of Performance, presenting Orquesta Acocan on Saturday, March 29th at the United Theater on Broadway. The ensemble features a carefully curated selection of Havana's finest musicians, polishing Cuban mambos golden sound with a contemporary sheen.